Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Well, today we conclude our series, My Family Circus, and I hope this has been a beneficial series for you. I want you to know, though, this is not a series. In fact, most of our series are not just series for you just to enjoy. They're series for you to apply to actually better your life. And that's ultimately my goal. I love when I get, you know, compliments or people say that they enjoy the services. But what I really want is I really want to see people's lives change. Because I really do think, especially with this series, that when the family is healthy, it changes our world. When the family is healthy, our culture becomes healthy, community becomes healthy, and ultimately our world becomes healthy. The family matters so much. And I so desperately want us to have healthy families. So in order to do that, we have to do more than just listen and nod our heads. We have to engage with what we're hearing. This is one of those series that you're going to want to take notes on. It's one of the series that if you see something on the screen that you like, take a picture of it. It's something that you want to practice and participate and think about it, because we're going to move on to a new series next week, but you're still a part of your family. And so I want you to continue working and growing, because I really want us all to have healthy families. Because the truth of the matter is, so often when it comes to families, our families are more like freak shows than the greatest show on earth. And I want us to have great families. I desperately want us to have great families. In fact, today's sermon was very difficult to write. And it wasn't difficult because it was a hard topic or because I didn't know what to say. It was difficult because I had so much information. With the last week of the series, there was so much that I just wanted to cram in. There were so many things. I left pages out of this sermon because there was so much information. I've tried my best to narrow it down to one big idea and to weave this idea throughout, but I just want you to know what you're about to hear. It's going to be like trying to take a drink out of a fire hydrant. You're going to be hit with a ton of information. And so I want to encourage you to lean in, take some notes, engage with it a little bit, because I just wanted to leave it all out on the table, because this is our last week talking about family, and I think the subject that we're talking about is so crucial for healthy families. Our text that's going to guide us today is from the book of James, and James was Jesus's brother, and if you're not familiar with the New Testament, if you're not familiar with the Bible, James was one of the very first pastors, and he wrote a letter to some of the earliest Christians. And one of the things I love about James is James is very black and white. He's very to the point. You don't have to wonder or guess what James is talking about. It's just very clear. In fact, James is written a lot like the Old Testament book of Proverbs. If you've never read the Bible before, I encourage you to check out James or Proverbs. It's just filled with, it's almost like little fortune cookie sayings, but they're from God. And they're very easy to understand. And it gives you something to think about, a little nugget to chew on. And James is very much like Proverbs, that he takes a whole bunch of different ideas and he weaves them together. And at first, when you read them, you're like, that's a great idea, and that's a great idea. I don't know how they connect, but it's all just really good stuff. And for me, when I first started reading the Bible, I struggled because I thought the Bible was really boring. And I had a hard time engaging it, and I had a hard time keeping my attention. But my youth pastor challenged me to get into an accountability group where we kept each other accountable to read the Bible. And we read the book of James, and it was the first time that the Bible actually spoke to me and actually heard something. And I said, okay, I understand what that says, and I can try to live that out and apply that. And so I love James. It's one of my favorite books of the Bible. And before we get into James, I want to give you the big idea for today, because like I said, we're going to cover a ton of material, and I want to let you know this is the idea that's going to weave all throughout our scripture. It's going to weave all throughout the whole day. And so if you're taking notes, you can start here. The big idea for today is the goal of communication is understanding, not agreeing. The goal of communication is understanding, not agreeing. Now that we have the big idea, I want to dive into our text. And at Next Level Church, we honor the text by standing to our feet and reading it. So I want to invite you to stand up and read with me nice and loud. Our text for today is James 1, 19 through 20. It says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. God, we come before you, and we ask that you would speak to our hearts in a real way. God, we have a lot of differences in this room. We have differences even about what we believe about you. We have differences even on our weeks. Some of us had great weeks and some of us had really tough weeks. God, there's so many things that are potential to divide us, but there's one thing that can unite us. We all need to hear from you. And so we just ask in the name of Jesus that you'd speak to us in a personal way. And God, whenever you speak, it's challenging, it's tough. So would you give us the courage to obey you even when it's hard? And God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may have a seat. All right, so to kick things off, get things going, I want to ask you a question, and it's a rhetorical question. I just want you thinking about this question. And the question is, what will it take to become great at this relationship? What will it take to become great at this relationship? Often in relationships, when they start to fall apart, when there starts to be conflict, we instantly start pointing the finger. And we think, well, if they would change, if they would be more like me, if they would fix this about themselves, then we would have peace, then we would have happiness in the relationship. But the truth of the matter is we can't control other people, and ultimately we can't change other people. All we can do is work and learn to control ourselves and become the best version of ourselves. So when it comes to your relationship, think about a family member who has maybe some difficulty. Maybe it's from, if you're the parent to your kids, or maybe it's spouses, or maybe it's a sibling. If there's some conflict, if there's some difficulty, as far as it's based on you, what will it take to become great at this relationship? I just want you thinking about that for a second. The truth of the matter is, when it comes to relationships, they're often broken down because of poor communication. And communication is a lot like this story that I recently heard. The story is about a woman who was driving a brand new Volvo, and she was in a busy shopping center, and there were just no parking spaces anywhere. So she kept circling the lot over and over again, looking for a spot. And finally, she found a car who was getting out of a spot. And so she put her blinker on and waited for the car to move out. And she decided she was going to reverse into the spot because it was such a busy day that she thought it would make her exit from the grocery store, from the store, easier. And so as she's going to back into the lot, a guy driving a souped-up muscle car swoops in quickly and takes her spot. She's obviously frustrated by this, and so she rolls down her window, waits for him to get out of the car, and when he gets out, she says, "Hey man, what's going on? That was clearly my spot. Why would you do that?" And he replied kind of smugly with a smirk on his face, "Because I'm young and I'm quick, so there's that." And then he walked in towards the grocery store. As he's walking to the grocery store, he hears a loud crash, and he turns to look, and the woman in the brand new Volvo is ramming her car into his car over and over again. He freaks out, obviously, and says, "You're crazy. Why would you do this? I can't believe you do this. What is going on?" And she rolls down the window and says, "Well, I'm old and I'm rich, so there's that." When it comes to communicating, that silly story is a perfect picture of how most of us communicate. We wait until there's something we disagree on, and then when we disagree, we pull out all the stops. We don't care about who's right. We don't care about who's wrong. We care about proving our point. And we justify our actions by saying, "They wronged me, so it doesn't matter what I do. They're in the wrong, so therefore I can behave however I want. They're in the wrong, so I'm going to pull out all the stops to show them that they're wrong." And the truth of the matter is, oftentimes problems don't get solved because we are horrible at communicating in disagreements. In fact, according to psychology, the bedrock, that is the foundation or the pillar of healthy relationships, is communication. Couples who know how to fight and know how to fight right and can communicate during disagreements are 10 times more likely to make it than couples that don't know how to fight in a disagreement. Let that sink in for a second. People who know how to fight right and know how to communicate in disagreements are 10 times more likely to make it than those who don't. The truth is that all of us, we have some work to do when it comes to communicating. We think that we're great at communicating, but we all have some room to grow. It's very difficult to communicate, especially when strong feelings well up inside of us. It's tough to communicate what's really going on. Now, I want to give you the definition of communication because I want to show you why I think so many of us have a difficult time communicating. We have a difficult time because we don't understand what communication is. Look at what the definition, according to the dictionary, this is what communication is. Communication involves the ability to pay attention to what others are thinking and feeling. Now, I don't know about you, but that's very different than what I think of when I think of communication. When I think of communication, I think of saying something and someone hears it and responds back and they say something and then we exchange words back and forth. That's communicating. But according to the definition, communicating involves the ability to pay attention to what others are thinking and feeling. A reason why we stink at communication is because we stink at paying attention to what others are feeling. We communicate, and then based off the words, we react. So when someone takes our parking spot, we react by ramming the car into them over and over again, thinking that they're going to change their ways. And oftentimes, we end up fighting about something that is not the actual problem. We fight because we don't know how to fight. So today, I want to teach us and talk about how to have healthy communication. And I want you to know, you will not become great at communicating after this one sermon. This is not like if you listen to this, then tomorrow you're going to wake up awesome at communication. That's not the way it works. Communication is something that takes a lifetime to learn. It's something that you can practice. It's something that if you might need to download this podcast and listen to it more than once. You can download it at nextlevelchurch.net or at iTunes. This is not something that you can just, I'm telling you, this is practical stuff that takes a lifetime to learn. I am paid money to communicate, and I work hard at learning how to communicate. But I want to tell you, it is much easier for me to communicate to you than it is in my relationships. It takes a lifetime to learn how to communicate, especially when someone has differences than you. And I want to teach you today what James has to say, because if we could just apply what he says, it would radically change our communication and radically, ultimately, change our families. Communication, according to psychology, is the pillar. It is the foundation of healthy relationships. And so I want to go back to the question that I asked you just a few seconds ago. What will it take for you to become great at this relationship? The answer is communication. If you want to know what's it going to take, the answer is not that they need to change everything, they need to fix, they just need to die. If they would just die, my life would be happier. That's not the answer. The answer is learning how to become great at communication. Because the truth is, we all have differences. We have differences of opinions. We have differences in politics. We have differences in behaviors. We have massive differences between us. But when we become great at communicating, we can find a bridge to gap our differences. So look at what James says. James says, everyone. Now, would you humor me and just say that word? One, two, three. Everyone.
Everyone.
Everyone. Say it again.
Everyone.
Everyone. Okay, we're done saying it. Everyone, okay? Everyone, James says, everyone. Now, this everyone actually does not mean everyone. We know that because James is writing to Christians. So James is not saying the whole world needs to listen to this. I would say that this is such wisdom that even if you don't believe in Jesus, you should apply this because it'll make your relationships better. But if you're here today and you don't believe in Jesus, this isn't written towards you. It's written to Christ followers. And James makes that really clear in the next verse. We'll get to it in just a second. But when James says everyone, specifically what he means is if you're here today and you follow Jesus, this is for you. Not if you kind of follow him or you've grown up in the church. It is, the dividing line is, do you follow Jesus, yes or no? If you do, this is for you. Look at what he says. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. When you communicate with others, if I would just practice being quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to becoming angry, we would become better at communicating. But the question is, why don't we do that? That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. The answer is, the reason we're not great at communicating is because we get in our own way. Oftentimes, we are waiting to find agreements or disagreements, and we do a horrible job of actually listening to what people are saying. James's point is so profound, and it really is profound when you start doing research and figuring out just how poorly we listen to one another. James says, listen, be quick to listen. Well, according to research, the average person only remembers 17 to 25% of the information they hear. Okay, you are given lots of information in the day, and you only retain 17 to 25%. That means the stuff that you hear, you're forgetting the vast majority of the stuff that you hear. This is why, if you want to remember something, you have to be active in listening. What does it mean to be active in listening? Well, I can't just let it go in my ears. I have to tell my brain to pay attention to it. And so some ways that you can be active in listening is by taking notes. I'm convinced that that number goes way down in hearing a sermon. I think you only hear about 10% of every sermon that is given. And the way that you get active on it is you start to engage with it. That is, a lot of people take pictures of the screen. If you see something that you like, you engage with it so you can remember it later. You underline something. You write something down. This is good. I want to revisit this. I want to come back to this. When I am reading a book, I know that my brain naturally checks out. And so to actively engage with the book, I have a highlighter or a pen, and I underline things that I like. Why? Because I'll zone out, and I'll read a whole chapter, and I don't have a fat clue what I just read. Because our brains are not wired to listen well. I did some research this week, and I found some interesting things that one of the keys to becoming a better listener is to repeat the thing that you just heard. So one of the keys to being a better listener is to repeat the thing that you just heard. That shows me that we're only hearing 17 to 25% of what's being said. One of the keys, so if you find yourself struggling with listening, one of the keys is to hone into what they just said and repeat it back to them. Or ask a question. I hear you saying this, is that what you mean? By actively listening and engaging what people say, you get your brain out of the fog. Have you ever been driving down the road and you just forget how you got to where you were going? That's a scary thing, but that's what our brains do all the time. And we've got to wake up our brains. How do we do that? We actively listen. We've got to engage. I read another article about how if you struggle with listening, finding something to fidget with will actually help you pay attention. And I love this research because for years I've had putty that I play with, like silly putty. Now I have a container of thinking putty. And a thinking putty is really expensive. I had a gift card, so it was free for me. But thinking putty is something that I play with during meetings. Why? Because in the meeting, it's easy for me to nod my head and then zone out and go somewhere else. But the meeting, the information is so important, I want to actively listen. And so I bring putty with me, and when I'm counseling someone, when I'm trying to listen, playing, fidgeting with something, there's actually science that backs this up, it helps you to engage. Engaging and being an active listener is so, so crucial. There's a great study that talks about the differences between men and women when it comes to listening. And when it comes to listening, the study and the research has found that men tend to only listen with half of their brains. Women listen with their full brain. So if you have a guy in your life and you're wondering, is he listening? That's a 50-50 chance. I saw this meme this week that made me laugh. It said, my wife just stopped and said, you weren't even listening, were you? I thought, that's a pretty weird way to start a conversation. The next time you're wondering, is the guy in my life, is he listening? Don't get mad at him. Don't get frustrated with him. Just know he's only using half his brain, so he's probably not listening. And if you want to train him to listen, you've got to ask good questions. So the next time you're wondering, is he checking out? Is he even paying attention? Ask a follow-up question. Hey, what did you hear me say? And if he doesn't have a fat clue what you just said, he wasn't listening. You do that enough, you will train the men in your life to listen to you. If you don't ask the right questions, we're going to zone out and we're going to go somewhere else. And yep, we hear you, but we don't really hear you. Ladies, you're welcome. You've got to, though, don't get angry. Don't get frustrated. Don't wag your finger and say, you never listen to me. Don't get upset. That's just going to create a divide. Ask a great question. Ask, hey, what did you hear me say? What did you think I said? Hey, I just gave you a list of things I need from the grocery store. What did you write down? Nothing. Okay, well, let's go over this. According to research, your words only convey about 7% of what you're trying to say. The other 93% is communicated through facial expressions and the tone of your voice. This is so important. Because when it comes to communication, we think communication is just words. But if every one of us is speaking with only 7% words, it means in order to become great at communication, I've got to become great at picking up on other people's cues. I've got to lean in. I've got to be an active listener. I have to ask questions. I have to nod my head. James says, be quick to listen. Active listening is different than just listening. Listening is just taking in information. Active listening is participating. So like in a sermon, I love active listening. Active listening is nodding your head when you hear something you like. Active listening is taking notes, writing something down, taking a picture of something on the screen. Active listening is laughing at a joke or leaning up in your seat. What is not active listening? That communicates that you're not paying attention. You might be, but it communicates something. Active listening is showing you're important, and because you're important, I'm going to engage with what you're saying. There's a great documentary that covers the different workings of individuals in the workplace. And in one of the episodes of the documentary, they were trying to help one of the salespeople learn how to become a better active listener to female customers. And this employee struggled with how to sell to those that were a different gender. And so they gave a seminar class to try to help him learn how to be a better active listener. And I think you'll get a kick out of this clip. Check it out.
Okay, when you're selling to women, it is crucial that you listen, Dwight. Also, you want to respect their... Are you listening now?
Yes.
Okay, well, you have to show us.
That's impossible. Listening happens in the ear and in the brain. I mean, some organisms have external hairs that vibrate to indicate auditory stimulation, but unfortunately, our external hairs don't vibrate at all.
Uh-huh.
What are you doing?
A little smile and a nod shows that I hear you. Got it?
Kind of.
Nellie, why don't you tell Dwight what we were doing earlier today, and Dwight, you show us that you're listening.
Well, we were in the warehouse where we were discussing the mural that I've commissioned Pam to paint there. We were talking about the color schemes and the major themes we want to hit. Children of the world coming together, cutting down trees to make paper, but not in a child labory way.
It's just up and down. Just a regular nod, like a person.
I am a person.
Of
yes.
course, you're a person. Yeah. We can do this, all right? And then we thought I can't carry on with that face. Look at it, I'm gonna get nightmares with that face. I mean, he looks like he is laboring over a stool having just eaten human flesh.
It's a bit extreme.
No, I'm sorry, but that is true.
Active listening is a skill that you can learn, and it takes work. As human beings, we weren't born to be great at listening. We are so easily distracted. And in order to show people in your life that they matter, you have to work hard at becoming great at listening. So it makes a lot of sense that James says, be quick to listen. That is, when someone in your life speaks, lean in. Take notes. Repeat back what they say. Be quick. Why? Because when you listen well to someone, you communicate that they matter. When you ignore someone, you communicate they don't matter. Listening is so crucial in relationships. Now, one of the mistakes that we make in relationships is that we often listen for what we agree to. So when we're talking to someone, if we don't agree or we don't disagree, we tend to zone out. When we find someone that we agree with, we zone in and we're like, yeah, that's a good idea. I agree with that. When someone enters into the conversation, something we disagree about, we zone in, but it causes a divide in the relationship. Because as human beings, we do not like disagreements. Disagreements, in our mind, show that you don't like me, or you don't accept me, or you're not like me. And because you're not like me, you're different. And if you're different, you are the enemy. And oftentimes, disagreements, simply disagreements, things that don't really matter in this world. Not talking about big, massive decisions. I'm talking about little disagreements. Often the littlest of disagreement can create a chasm in a relationship. And this is why when it comes to listening, we have to become better at it. And the way that we become better at it is we have to get rid of a lie. We have believed a lie that we have to agree to be friends. We've believed it. It is so ingrained in our culture and so ingrained in our minds that we believe the only way I can have community with you, the only way that I can be friends with you, the only way I can be family with you is if we agree on everything. You're not going to agree with everyone on anything. And if you disagree and think, oh, we disagree, therefore there's a divide in our relationship, you will have so much chaos. We have to reject the lie that we have to agree to be friends. The truth is, we can disagree and still be friends. We can. We can disagree. We can believe something different about politics and still be friends. We can believe something different even about the Bible and still be friends. We can believe something different and be friends if we remember the goal of communication. The goal of communication is understanding, not agreement. Why is this important? Well, because when you disagree, your first reaction is to argue verbally or to interrupt or to convince or to talk over. And you have to tell yourself, I don't agree with them, and it's okay that I don't agree. You don't have to support every bad behavior that's in other people's lives. You don't have to. Agreeing does not mean that you think that what they believe is true. You can be understanding and still disagree with someone's opinion. If someone comes to you, every time I teach this, someone comes up to me afterwards and says, well, what if someone believes something that's contrary to God? Or what if someone believes something that is just completely wrong? Then I say the same thing. You seek to understand. You don't have to agree. Why? Because have you ever changed anyone's mind when they give you an idea and you say you're an idiot? Have you ever changed anyone's mind on Facebook when they throw out a political idea and you say you're wrong? Let me tell you why you're wrong. And why do we jump to saying every time someone's wrong, they're an idiot? It's because we believe deep down inside that in order to be friends, we have to agree. You do not have to agree to be friends. In order to be friends, in order to have healthy family, you have to seek to understand. So when I disagree with you, I need to seek to understand. Why? Because when I've shown you that I understand where you're coming from, you might be open to hearing a different opinion. But until I show you that what you say matters, what I communicate in relationship is that I'm the only person that's important in this relationship. You have to seek to understand, not just agree. The truth is, I don't have to agree with you. I don't have to agree with your politics. I don't have to agree with your religion. I don't have to agree with the way that you raise your family. I don't have to agree. But in order to have a healthy relationship, I got to seek to understand. Now, if the goal of communication is agreement, then when we disagree, I will be quick to speak. And James says that you have to be quick to listen, but slow to speak. In order to be slow to speak, you need to remember that you need more information. If you're taking notes, I'd encourage you to write this down. In order to be slow to speak, you must seek to find more information. In order to be slow to speak, you must seek to find more information. We think that in order to have a great relationship, we have to agree. And so when there's a disagreement, we push back, we fight, we cause all sorts of chaos. Once you convince yourself and once you believe that we don't have to agree to still be friends, the next key is you have to say, okay, I need more information. So if you say something that I totally disagree with and I think that is just the dumbest idea ever, instead of attacking you, instead of telling you why you're wrong, I've got to seek to understand. And how do I do that? Asking questions. There's some information that I'm missing. I know you're a good person, but that idea was really dumb. Let me figure out why you believe that idea. I know you're a great person. I know you didn't mean that. I know you didn't mean to hurt my feelings, but what you said was hurtful. So let me ask some questions. Think about this just for a second. If you were to walk up to me and say, hey, you know what, Pastor Rob, you are the worst preacher I've ever heard. I would not agree with that statement. I would disagree with that statement. But if I come back at you and say, well, let me tell you, you're the worst church member I've ever seen. You're an idiot. You're not going to say, oh, you know what, thank you for putting me in my place. Like, now I think you're the best preacher ever. But if you come at me and say, Rob, you're the worst preacher ever, and I say, oh, you know what, that kind of hurt. Why would you say that? And then they can say, oh, no, I was just joking with you. Then I can respond to that and say, you know what, it might be because I'm insecure, but that's not a funny joke to me, and I would appreciate if you wouldn't say that again. And then they can respond by saying, oh, I didn't know, I was just trying to be funny, and I apologize, and now we can move on with our relationship. But the first thing you got to do when you disagree is you've got to seek to understand by asking questions. Why would you say that? Why do you believe that? Why? Oftentimes you find when you ask tough questions, you often find that what they're saying is not really what they're saying. And so often, because we react to people's words, we start fighting about things that aren't even the real issue. And if you want to get to the real issue, you got to lean in and ask some questions. So I feel like you're angry. And I don't know, did I do something wrong? No, you didn't do anything wrong. Okay, well, I feel like your tone is coming off as being upset. Are you upset? No, I'm not upset. Okay, I'm still feeling like there's some anger here. What's going on? Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to be angry. I've had a really stressful day at work, and that's causing me to be frustrated. Okay, I can get on board with that. Let me help you with that. But that's not what we do, is it? We see anger, and we say, you're wrong for being angry. We see anger, and we respond with more anger. James says, you got to be quick to listen and slow to speak. Being slow to speak does not mean that you don't say anything. It means that you work really hard at saying the right things. And what is the right thing? Questions. Ask questions. When you do not understand where someone is coming from, ask questions until you do understand where they're coming from. You don't have to agree with them. You got to understand where they're coming from. Here are some signs that you are quick to speak. And these are things that we all struggle with. Some signs that you're quick to speak. Telling others how they should feel. When you tell someone, you should be afraid of that. You should be worried by that. That should make you angry. How does that not make you angry? It is not your place to tell other people how they should feel. Different personalities feel different ways. It is not your place to tell others how they should feel. Dismissing someone else's feelings. When you dismiss someone else's feelings, what you communicate in the relationship is that you're the only one that matters. People have different feelings, and people feel different ways about different things. It is not my job to say that's a wrong feeling. It's my job to understand why you feel that way and lean in. When I lean in, then I can understand, and sometimes I can even change your opinion because I've shown you, you matter. This week on Monday, we were at the movies, and a couple rows in front of us was a husband and wife, and she was sitting down, so I couldn't hear her part of the conversation, but he was standing up, and I heard him say over and over again, "You shouldn't worry about that. That's not something to worry about. Why are you so worried? I just don't understand. Stop worrying about that." Now, in the moment, he was reacting to something. He couldn't understand why she was worried, but what he was communicating to her is your opinions and feelings don't matter. Because I'm not worried about it, you shouldn't be worried about it. And has that line of thinking ever worked? Like if you're angry and someone says, just stop being angry, have you ever said, oh, that's what I needed. Thank you. Like when you're worried about something and someone just says, knock it off, have you ever been like, oh, thank you. You know what? I've been worried about this for 24 hours, but now that you said, knock it off, I'm no longer worried. Right? It doesn't work, and yet that's how we communicate. And why do we communicate that way? Because we think in order to be friends, in order to be family, we got to agree. And I don't agree with your feeling, therefore I'm going to tell you how you should feel. That's unhealthy. What is healthy is to say, imagine if in this scenario, if the husband said, hey, honey, I get that you're worried about that. I get that you're upset about it. Tell me, why are you worried about that? Okay, you know, I don't quite understand, but let me help fix this. You're worried that we're running out of money. Okay, what if I go and I get a second job? Will that help? Yes, that'll help. Okay, now we've solved the problem. But so often we argue and fight about what is not even the problem. It's not even the issue because we don't know how to listen to one another and we're way too quick to speak. Another sign that you're quick to speak is arguing before asking questions. Arguing before asking questions. It's so easy when someone says something that I disagree with to just argue back and tell them why they're wrong. But that just doesn't work. Instead, become great at asking follow-up questions. A few years ago, a friend of mine was texting me some questions about God. And I really leaned in on this because this is one of my friends that doesn't often talk about God. In fact, my friend often says that he's barely a Christian. He says he's a Christian, but just barely. And he comes to church all the time, but we don't have like God conversations. So I was really excited that we're having this conversation. I gave some opinions and gave some thoughts. And then to try to be good at communication, I asked him, well, how do you feel about this subject? And he responded back and he said, I'm agnostic. And that phrase, agnostic, means something to me. Agnostic means that you believe in a higher power, but you don't know who it is. So it's not an atheist, but it's also not a Christian. And it was my understanding that my friend was a Christian. And so when he said, I'm agnostic, it threw me off. And I was like, what? I didn't know like that was the ground. I thought we had something we agreed on. Even though we barely agreed, I thought we had a starting point. And I started going a million different places and started getting worked up and worried. And I just said, okay, take a pause. I don't have to agree with him. I need to understand where he's coming from. So I asked a follow-up question. What do you mean by being agnostic? And he replied back quickly, I just meant that I don't really care about this one way or another. I'm ambivalent to it. I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me. I would not have used that word agnostic, but he did. And in his definition, he meant something that was very different than what I heard. How often in your communication are people hearing something that you did not mean? And don't you wish that they would lean in and ask follow-up questions? Don't you wish they would say, hey, this is what I heard. Is this what you meant? What did you mean when you said that? When we seek to understand, we show, I matter in this relationship, but so do you. It's not just my way or the highway. We both matter. Understanding helps us become great at communicating. And the last one is making judgments before you have all the facts. Making judgments before you have all the facts. Signs that you are quick to speak. If you make a judgment before you have all the facts, if you jump to the conclusion that someone is an idiot because they disagree with you, you're wrong. It's not our place to tell people how they feel. It's our place to understand. They may be an idiot. They might be wrong. They might have the stupidest idea ever. But if you want to show them they matter, seek to understand. Ask a follow-up question. Don't make a judgment before you have all the facts, because the truth of the matter is you could be wrong about what they just said. So James says that we have to be quick to listen and slow to speak. So the next time you're frustrated in a disagreement, tell yourself, I don't have all the information. If you want to become great at being slow to speak, you've got to say this phrase. Just say it to yourself out loud. Get it tattooed on your arm. Write it down somewhere. Because we're going to disagree. And when we disagree, I got to remind myself, I don't have all the information. And once I say I don't have all the information, then I can lean in to ask follow-up questions to help me figure out the information that I'm missing. Why do you believe that? Why did you say that? Why do you have this opinion? Help me understand. Lean in. And it shows people that, here's the thing. In relationships, when someone disagrees with you, we so want to push back on them, but the disagreement is already creating a wedge. And if you want to fix this wedge, you got to offer a bridge. And the bridge is saying, you matter to me. You're important to me. So I don't agree. I don't know where you're coming from, but help me understand. And you do that by asking questions. Well, James says that we got to be quick to listen, slow to speak, but then he drops the hardest bomb on us, and he says we got to be slow to become angry. I am convinced that if we would put the first two things in practice, we would be slow at getting angry. If we would be quick to listen and slow to speak, it would help us to not be as angry. But the truth is we get angry first, and then we speak, and then we listen. Anger is an emotion that is not a bad emotion. Anger is an emotion that is like fire. Fire is not good or bad. It's in the right environment. It can be used for either good or bad. Your anger is an emotion that God has given you, and what we need to do is we need to learn to listen and be slow to speak so that we don't speak in anger. There are three ways that we respond to anger. Number one is the competitor. The competitor responds to anger by blaming or accusing other people. Some of us respond that way, that when we have a disagreement and we don't like it, we compete back. Let me tell you why you're wrong. Let me tell you all the facts. You don't know what you're doing. You're wrong and I'm right. The competitor doesn't see a disagreement as anything more than a competition. And the competitor will seek to win no matter the cost. Another way that we respond to anger is the doormat. The doormat responds to anger with agreement even when they don't agree. So the doormat, as soon as voices start to raise, as soon as the temper starts to flare, they say, oh yeah, you're right, I'm wrong. But secretly, the doormat keeps this anger with them and carries it on throughout the rest of the week. The avoider is the third way that we respond to anger, and the avoider responds to anger by avoiding it at all costs. That is, this is just too tense, this is too much for me, I just can't even, it's just too much, can't handle it. These negative emotions, they're just too much. The avoider tries to respond to anger by avoiding it at all costs. Now, here's the truth of the matter is, no matter if you're the competitor, a doormat, or an avoider, I feel a great general rule of thumb is the 24-hour rule. Now, it is a general rule of thumb because there are some exceptions to this. But the 24-hour rule is a rule that says, in order for me not to respond in anger, I'm going to give myself 24 hours to think about this and to understand where you're coming from. So the 24-hour rule, if you're a competitor, the competitor overreacts to anger and then has to clean up the mess 24 hours later. And if you're a competitor, when you start to feel yourself getting angry, you need to say, I need some more information. I need to learn something else. And I'm not going to respond. Listen here. If you're a competitor, please don't ever send emails angry. Do not send text messages angry. Because you're going to regret what you say in those moments. Instead, give yourself 24 hours, because at the end of that 24 hours, you might not be angry about it anymore. Or if you are still angry, then you've at least calmed down so you can respond in a healthy way. The doormat agrees in disagreement and then feels angry 24 hours later. The reason the rule of 24 is great for the doormat is because the doormat needs time to process. And the doormat needs to learn to say, hey, I'm not ready to commit to this. I'm not ready to say, give me time to process this. And 24 hours later, we'll come back and we'll discuss it. I'm not going to avoid it. I'm not going to ignore it. I just need 24 hours to come back and revisit it. The avoider avoids all anger and finds more ways to avoid it 24 hours later. And if you're an avoider, this is what happens. You ignore anger, and it just keeps stirring in your brain, and sometimes it's weeks or sometimes it's months later, but by the time you communicate that anger, you have a tendency to over-communicate. And the key thing is if you are a voider of anger, you've got to set a 24 limit that just says, hey, if I'm still thinking about this issue tomorrow, it's important enough that we need to have a conversation. I'm not going to avoid it. Because it's not other people's job to pull things out of you or to read your brain. It's your job to communicate what's going on inside of you. I love the quote by Lawrence J. Peter. He says, "Speak when you are angry, and you'll make the best speech you'll ever regret." I don't know 100% if this is true or not, because I don't work in nature and don't really know animals, but I found it on the internet, so I trust that it's true. When a rattlesnake is cornered, sometimes it becomes so angry that it bites itself. That's a great follow-up question if you don't understand. Thank you for being an active listener. When a rattlesnake is cornered, sometimes it becomes so angry that it bites itself. And I think that is a true picture of what anger does. Anger is such a strong emotion that we end up hurting ourselves and not actually solving a problem. That we hurt ourselves by the way that we respond, by the way that we disagree. And if we'd give ourselves some time, if we'd give ourselves 24 hours or a pause, we could respond in a more healthy way. Because the truth of the matter is, people in your life are going to say things that you do not agree with. And sometimes you need time to process that. And so you come back and you revisit it 24 hours later and say, "Hey, I heard you say this. What did you mean by that? Or that hurt my feelings. Let's talk about that." You bring it up in a healthy way so they actually hear what you're talking about. Now, why is this whole thing important? Well, it's important because what James says next. We're closing with this. In James 1:20, he says, "Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." Why is this written to Christians? Because ultimately, Christians, the way that you respond in communication is a reflection of Jesus. The way you respond in communication to the people you work with is a reflection of Jesus. The way you respond in communication to your family is a reflection of Jesus. The way you communicate and talk to people is a reflection of the God that you serve. This is so important, especially if you're here today and you're a parent. The way that you talk to your kids becomes the voice of God that they hear in their head. And if you struggle with God, if every time you make a mistake, you hear this voice that says, "You're not good enough, you're horrible, I can't believe you did that," there's a great chance at some point in your life you had a parent who was too hard on you and too negative with you, and now that's become the voice that you communicate, and you say, "It must be God." We have to be incredibly careful at how we communicate, especially when we disagree. James says this is so important because when you get angry, it's not a representation of God. Human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. So that once again takes us to the big idea. The goal of communication, it's understanding, not agreement. When I get angry, let me seek to understand. Let me ask some follow-up questions. Let me wrestle with what just happened. Let me give 24 hours and I'll get back to you. Here's today's win. The win's what you do with all this. Write down the goal of communication and put it somewhere where you can see it often. Why? Because you're going to get frustrated with the people in your life. And family has a way of pulling out the worst in us. So if you want to become great at communication, write this down. Think about it. Remind yourself of it. The goal of communication is understanding, not agreement. When you feel yourself disagreeing, look to the goal of communication. So next time I disagree with my kids or my family, my wife, my brother, sister, the next time I disagree, I need to remind myself, "Hey, listen, the goal of communication is not agreeing with this. It's understanding. We can disagree and we can still be friends, but I got to figure out, why do you believe that? I got to figure out where you're coming from so I can show you, you matter, you're important. And then we can talk about the real issue at hand." Will you pray with me? God, we come before you right now and we just ask for help in this. It's so difficult for us as humans to communicate. We're such simple creatures with complex feelings and complex emotions. And so we just need your supernatural help. Would you help us to communicate in healthy ways, in ways that ultimately reflect you? God, would you give us wisdom to know when to bring up frustrations and when to bring up anger and when, God, to just push it aside? God, would you help us to understand that we can love one another when we understand that we don't have to agree with one another? Help us to reach out to our differences and to not be separated by the things we don't agree on. We ask, God, that you would do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine in our families this year. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.